This is the DRF Players Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the DRF Players Podcast. This is show 251, the July 14th, 2017 edition. I'm your host, Peter Thomas Fornital, back with you live once again from the Brooklyn Bunker. Second show in a row from the Brooklyn Bunker after my some crazy situations that I was in attempting to get enough hotel Wi-Fi to run the show, making sure I made my train connections to get to the hotel in time in Edinburgh, all that stuff we had to do while I was traveling in Europe. I was feeling like, for once, I was the travel MVP of the DRF Players Podcast. But as he is wont to do, coming from the clouds at the end of a contest to hit with an event to send him straight to the top, that's exactly what's happened to the People's Champion, Jonathan Kinchin. JK, I got to hear the story about how you ended up almost not being on today's DRF Players Podcast.
Man, I tell you what, I've got traveling nerves of steel from being standby since I was a young kid. My mom was obviously pregnant with me when she got her job at American Airlines, so in my life of flying, I've probably paid for a ticket five times. So it can be stressful, but I've learned to kind of deal with it and adapt with it. Yesterday was one of the most stressful. I didn't think I was going to make the flights to get to New York. Finally, 30 people on the standby list that because of a flight getting canceled. I didn't think I was going to get it. I made the flight. I then got back to my cheeky traveling ways, and I got in an Uber from LaGuardia down to Manhattan. I was going to just hotels tonight, like on my phone, like I always do. Three no-goes where I thought I had a room on hotels tonight, and when I showed up, there wasn't actually a room there. I didn't get into a room, and I begged to call it a room. It's more like a dorm room until 4 o'clock.
It's a closet with a bed.
Right.
Until you're lucky it's not one of those beds that like folds up into the wall, you know.
Exactly. It kind of is. I'm not very tall and my feet were hanging off the edge. But the good part about it is last night when I was talking to hotels tonight about how unacceptable it was for them to kind of – oh, there's my iron, by the way. So let me grab that real quick.
Always fashionable, JK. And, of course, the reason he's we should leave the hotel guy in the audio room. But the reason JK in New York is going to be heading up to Stamford, Connecticut in a little bit, if you're one of the six people listening live, we've built up a decent live audience for the show. But this one, we're just sort of doing it a random time here on Friday morning. I think this will probably get as many listeners as some of the sound checks we used to do with podcast emeritus host Mike Hogan. But anyway, if you happen to be listening live and you can get to the Bobby V's Teletheater in Stamford today, we're going to have a lot of fun. JK might not have slept at all, but once he gets that Lasix on, he's going to be his usual excited self, and we're going to bet some horses and have some fun at Bobby V's Teletheater. He'll be there from noon. I'll join in the fun about 5, and we'll see. The over-under on JK falling asleep tonight is probably about 9:45. But anyway, you're back now, I assume. Continue with your story.
Yeah, absolutely. And so anyway, it's funny. Our viewership is – our listenership is funny because last night I was sitting on the phone with a lady from Hotels Tonight. And they tried to give me like a kind of a $30 credit or something. And I said, look, that's not going to work. Finally, I had to transfer to like 7 different people. I got them to settle on a $100 credit. I was tired. I wanted to go to sleep. I said, look, let me just be honest with you. I'm going to take your $100 credit. But maybe you don't care. I have about 3,000 Twitter followers and a podcast I do twice a week. And I'm going to make sure that everyone that follows that podcast is going to know that Hotels Tonight is dead to me, and I just want you to know that. She was not swayed by any means, but nonetheless, that's my jab at Hotels Tonight. They're usually really good. I've had a lot of success with that website. It's great.
New York, though, man. New York is its own. It's its own animal.
I've done it here 50 times.
That's interesting.
Not 50,
okay.
Obviously. I've done it here, you know, 10 times. But anyways, so – so, at least punish them for a little while for ruining my night. But
there were reports of a major figure in the tournament world sleeping on a bench in Central Park. I was pretty sure that was going to be you, but now I guess it's odds on to be Tommy Masses.
Yeah, before you even finished the story, I knew there was only one person that could have been.
But you did. Now, did you sleep at all? Did you get a chance? What time did you get settled into your current place?
I finally went to bed at 4, and then I set my alarm for 7:45 to call you, and then I ignored it. Actually, I texted you and said, "Hey, Pete, can I call you back in 30 minutes?
That's amazing. So. Well, you're here now. That's what matters. We're going to – I've got enough energy for the both of us, as you can hear. I think it's still – I'm half on UK time, so it's really like the middle of the day to me. It doesn't feel like 8:42 in the morning as we talk. We'll have to truncate the show maybe just a little bit to make sure you can figure out the Grand Central situation to get yourself up to Stanford while you were ironing your clothes or whatever that was. I was telling the listeners about the cool thing we're doing up in Stanford today. It's going to be a lot of fun. I encourage everybody to check it out. And I predict you're going to rally. I really do. I mean, the New York energy, you know, when we get back to the city after the show tonight, you know, there's not that many opportunities I have to show you my favorite places in Brooklyn. So I'm going to try. But if you collapse now, everybody understands why.
Well, here's my plan, right? I'm going to when we get off the show, I'm going to be ready to go. I'm going to head downstairs. I'm going to take an Uber to Grand Central Station.
Wait, whoa. Uber to Grand Central Station? I thought you were staying 5 minutes away.
I don't care how close it is. There is no shot that I'm walking.
Okay, well, let me just tell you right now, at traffic in the 9 o'clock hour by Grand Central Station, you could turn a 10-minute walk into a half-an-hour car ride. I just want to make
okay,
that
point. Maybe I'll walk. Either way, I'm going to grab a pizza. And you know how in the subway there's always those beers for sale, and you can kind of get them and put them in a paper bag. I might just get a beer and a pizza and see if that can't get me back going in action.
I like it.
Then I'll open up the PPs on the train, and then I should be healed by that point.
I like it. I like it. It's going to be fun. I haven't looked really at the cards for today, but by the time people are listening to this, that's irrelevant anyway. If you're interested in that, you're going to have to get yourself to Stanford. Maybe JK will periscope 5 minutes of his thing and give a couple of spot plays or something. But what I think we should do, I want to do this show in reverse order. Because we have the sort of weirdness about timing today, I want to talk about the races for Saturday, and then I'm going to delve into some of these excellent listener questions. We'll see. I've promised a couple people we were going to talk Del Mar and Saratoga today. I realized that could even be better for Tuesday. So let's just see where we go with that. I'm sure we'll be touching on some thoughts about Del Mar and Saratoga. I know I'm getting excited. I just did confirm, by the way, JK, we'll do a little production meeting in the middle of the show here before we get started talking about these races, that I am going to be hosting live seminars, not really seminars, it's sort of a show, at Saratoga, Naira Betts Tent, 11 to 11:30, 11:35, whenever the anthem begins, on Saturdays. So that's going to be super fun. Last year we did a couple of them. This year I think we're going to get a little more traction because we're going to do 7 of them. And my question for you is, how many Saturdays are you around with your involvement in this Win, Play, Show TV show? I imagine it's not a lot, but how many are you around, and would you be willing to participate? We could do sort of a live version of the podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm definitely there for 2 Saturdays. I'll be there for that annoying guy's birthday. That's that Saturday. I'll definitely be there. And then the following Saturday, I'll be there. Unless, I haven't told you this yet. Unless, I think Austin, my son, might come for like a week, like in the middle, like Monday through Friday.
Awesome.
I might have to fly back home to get him and then fly him back home. That could happen. That could potentially happen that second Saturday where I would miss, but I doubt it.
Gotcha. Well, I'll book you for the 5th. So that's going to be a fun day. It's Whitney Day. And you know what? Come to the seminar hangout. You'll probably get an invite to that annoying guy's birthday. I brewed the beer yesterday that we're going to be drinking that night. And early reports have it coming in pretty strong and of good quality. So
last time you brewed beer, you ended up in your neighbor's pool. So this could be exciting.
I think I'm going to try to get my own little swimming pool this year so I don't have to bother the neighbors. That's plan A, but we'll see. I could be climbing the fence once again. We'll see how that goes. let's move on to talk about some racing here. We're going to talk, there's some interesting stuff, actually. It's sort of a nondescript weekend with the summer meets about to begin. But I was really intrigued by Belmont's eighth race on Saturday, the Forbidden Apple. Now, Forbidden Apple, I'm going to guess he was before your time, JK.
We're not talking about Adam and Eve.
Not that Forbidden Apple. This is the Forbidden Apple that was trained by Christophe Clement. And my fondest memory of my brother and I think it was in the fall of 2000, we were at a bourbon festival in Kentucky. And for this big day of racing, we decided to drive up to Turfway Park, nearly to Cincinnati in northern Kentucky. And, of course, we were playing the Turfway races, but we were also playing simulcast from Belmont. And there was this horse, I don't even remember exactly why I liked him, probably because at that point in my handicapping career I'd had plenty of nice scores on Jose Santos-ridden, Christophe Clement-trained horses on the turf, the very often the patented Santos strangle job, the pace falls apart, here comes Clement with some allowance horse in a graded stake, paying a big price. This used to happen frequently back in that era. This horse was a huge price, at least 20-1, I think. Did not get that strangle ride, was much closer to the pace that day, as I recall. Ended up getting the job done at 20-1. My brother and I, super psyched. Let's just say it like this. The bourbon was flowing freely that night. And it's an appropriate story, actually, for today, JK, because after I get done with this show and before I join you in Stamford, I'm actually going to my brother's engagement lunch today at Gramercy Tavern. Super-duper congratulations to Mark Fornital and his bride-to-be, Lisa. Very exciting times. And that's how. And I was even able to tie it in with the Forbidden Apple reference. All right, let's talk about this race, though. How do you see the pace shaping up in here?
I mean, I think it's going to be fast. You know, what's great is I can actually talk while I'm pulling it up. I get the Wi-Fi working, but I feel comfortable talking about this race without even looking at the PPs. It's amazing when you do a couple of things talking about a race, and you don't even. You can kind of memorize this stuff. I think it's going to be fast because the outside horses, I think it's the 10 and the 11.
Yes. Searsha's Prince and King Creesa.
Absolutely. They're drawn outside. So it makes me feel as if because they're drawn outside, one of them's Jose and one of them is Kindred. That makes me feel like those two horses will be forward to try to get position. It's a flat mile. They don't want to be hung out wide. I think that those two horses will go on with it. I know Disco Partner is more of a late running sprinter, but a sprinter nonetheless that could also kind of cook it up a little bit from the outside. Although Arad shows up there, he's going to probably do a little bit more of that strangle that you mentioned that Santos used to do.
He's the modern version, isn't he? Arad is he's kind of the modern version of Jose.
Yeah, he'll
now that you mentioned it.
He'll choke someone, although this could be, and I know maybe we can check it later. I don't know if you've seen it yet. This could be a good transition to talk about what we said we were going to talk about, where his brother was actually being the strangle artist last Sunday on Rubalinda. And we mentioned that we were going to touch base on that. Maybe later is a more appropriate time since we've already breached the Forbidden Apple. But I do think they're going to run a little bit. I think they don't really have a choice. To kind of go from there. And like we've talked about on the show before, it's what the post position can sometimes and the riders can sometimes influence pace scenarios more than the horses themselves.
I think that's absolutely right and a very good point. Who do you think will be the beneficiary? The horse that I like on top, I think, certainly will benefit from a hotter pace, though he's succeeded with mellower paces in the past, even as a closer. But give your selection for this race first, and then we'll talk more about it.
Well, I mean, I think Offering Plan is going to be super tough from, you know, the last time. Last race, he was closing into more of a moderate pace and still got the job done against some of these same characters. I think he's interesting. I think Disco Partner stretching out is interesting. I mean, that horse ran a huge figure last time. Our Twitter pundits obviously probably saw that there were some questions about whether or not the final time was right, and Craig did a great job, Milkowski from Timeform US, like he always does, of kind of explaining to the people how he verifies if and when a time is right or wrong.
And he had that one correct, didn't he?
Yeah, from all accounts, that time was right. And so the number that was earned that day was a real number. So, like you said, Christophe Clement is not the type of guy where you say, ooh, Christophe stretching him out. I don't really trust him. You know, if you got, you know, if you gave me 10 trainers that are going to stretch a horse out on the grass, he would be one of my top 10 I would use in that category. So there's really no concern there. I guess my strongest opinion in this thing is, or I guess my boldest opinions two ways is, I think Mohamed might actually show that he's a horse.
Really?
Where are you getting that from? Word on the streets, he worked on the turf two back and was actually pretty impressive. So,
Feels like a desperation move to me. You know, 5-for-5 to start the career, 0-for-6 since, not a lot of turf in terms of the pedigree, I don't think, unless I miss something. It just felt like a desperate move. And I mean, I'm against Offering Plan too. I mean, not Offering Plan, excuse me, I like Offering Plan. I'm against Disco Partner too, just on the idea that as impressive as that last race was, and I agree with everything you said about Clement, it was just such a great setup and great ride last time, and I just have like sort of a religious objection almost to closing sprinter stretching out. Everything you say about the horse is true. He'd be at least a defensive use for me in that regard, but I feel like there's money to be made here maybe, even with a shorter-priced horse like Offering Plan going against the likes of Disco Partner and Mohamed.
Well, I don't disagree with you. I'm actually against it. You know, obviously, I had already expressed that I kind of like Disco Partner a little bit. The horse I'm against, I'm assuming, is a horse that you'd be interested in using, and that's Grand Arch. I think that this is a setup for another spot.
You know, I don't like him. He gets the needed class release. I'm just not sure how good he is. He doesn't win that much, and when you go back and look at the wins, it seems like they're races where, like, all the stars align, and I just don't really see that happening here. I'm not, like, going to go call a friend in the UK and lay the horse or anything, but I was just, you know, I was going to try to press up Offering Plan. Get Jets looked like an obvious contender whose style fit the race as well. That's where I was going to mostly look to go in here. For multis, how are you playing it?
I'm going to use, and it's actually, we didn't even do any justice of why we kind of talked about this situation, but there is a cross country pick four tomorrow that this race is included in. It's two races from Belmont, two races from Los Al. I love these types of bets. I remember when I first got involved in like horse racing, they had that Magna 5 bet where there's 5 bets at like, at the Stronic tracks, and they all happen within an hour, and I just absolutely love that. You don't have to wait. This one you actually do have to wait, but I think it's really cool that they can kind of tie the two together. So it's actually the sequence that I did for the JK's Play of the Day or whatever. I used Get Jets, Offering Plan, Mohamed, and Disco Partners A horses, and Bondurant, the Ian Wilkes horse, as a lone B horse in there.
Interesting.
So,
give the case for Bondurant.
He's just one that has always kind of been around there. He wasn't obviously in the Maker's Mile, but everywhere else, he's kind of just kind of hung around. I respect Ian Wilkes. Manny Franco's riding lights out. He'll be a big price with a lot more of the New York contingent taking money, and I just thought he'd be a good B horse to have. That if he were to win, I'd be a little bit frustrated that he did. Going back real quick to Mohamed, maybe I need to look at it on the formulator side of things. I'm looking through time form, but I was looking at this breeding thing, and it said that he has a half that's won on the turf. So then I pulled it up on time form, and I see the horse. He's a half to New Year's Day, who's obviously the Breeders' Cup Juvenile winner, and he's also a half to a horse named Record for Winslow. But the horse has a win. But I can't – it doesn't – it wasn't
– I looked at it quickly and it didn't
– There's no turf figure.
Yeah, it seemed – I didn't see the figure. The horse is called Winslow, right? But it wasn't like – I mean, anyway, the horse had won. I'm not saying it's impossible the horse could act on turf, but it's not like they've been waiting to – there's some hidden reason to be waiting to get this horse on turf. It's clearly a what are we going to do now? Let's try the turf situation. But that info you had about working well, I mean, that's something.
Yeah, I mean, I probably deserve to be made fun of a little bit for saying the horse's name is Record for Winslow. because the header actually says career record for Winslow. Yeah.
So I was being kind. I would jump on any opportunity to make fun of you, JK, but when you travel to New York for a seminar just to bail me out and then get no sleep and still do the podcast, I was going to let you get away with that.
Oh, you're going to pay for it. Don't you worry about it.
Fantastic. But any further thoughts on this one, or shall we turn our attention to this maiden race that goes as the second in the sequence?
Let's run to the second.
It's not just a hunch play, but I really do like number two, Mr. Pete here. What I like about this horse, this is an angle I love in maiden races. When you see maidens who are bet the first time, to me, a maiden who is bet the first time, that tells you this horse is supposed to have speed. And then when you see that horse not break, like for me, that's enough of an excuse to just, whatever happens from there, I'm interested in that horse next time. Because they were supposed to have speed, they didn't break, they didn't show their talent. You can very often bet those horses back at prices. This horse has the added benefit of the fact that actually Mr. Pete did some running after that bad break. The trainer numbers at first blush look pretty dire with the second start and all that stuff. And even if you formulate, they don't get much better. But I mean, in his career, just from following him all these years, Ryerson's a guy I really do expect his horses to improve second out. I'm just going to put the trainer stat aside on this one, and that's who I'm the most interested in of the runners in this race. Who did you come up with in your picks?
Using the 2 and the 4 as A horses, the 6 as a B horse, I completely agree with you, and it's actually a good point. I actually think that the previous betting odds on a horse are the most underutilized aspect of our past performances. I think that people, and maybe they don't. I mean, I mean, I'm guilty of it at times. I think that there's so many stories that can be told from that situation. I think it's very important. One of my favorite things to do is when there's two horses that are coming out of the same race, if they're kind of going off around the same time or same price, you know, it's actually a huge pick and price strategy that I use. There's two horses coming out of an allowance race 3 weeks ago on a Wednesday. If it's a close tie, I will take the one that was bet more the time before, because we always talk about it. The money is always right. It might not always win the race.
Okay.
But the money is typically will lead you in the right direction of how horses their chances, at least.
If God had come down before the race and given an objective assessment of each horse's chance in the race, if you can only look at one piece of data to replicate that fictitious scenario, the closing price would be the one. That would be where the signal is in that regard.
Right.
In aggregate.
I mean, even when a horse is the favorite and shouldn't be the favorite, it's typically a higher level assessment that you've come up with. That you have other information that can lead you to believe that horse shouldn't be the favorite. But typically the horse, you could, if you looked at it objectively and took your opinion out of it, then you could say to yourself, oh, that makes sense. That horse should be favored. Now it's not always, but typically,
very often, if you look at races in a large, obviously when you pick it down to the micro of a race of a sample of one, there's loads of exceptions. I mean, maybe it even happens once a card, where you can identify a clearly wrong favorite. It probably does. But if you're looking at races by the groups of the dozens or the 20s or the hundreds, and you look at the way people bet, there've been studies of this. The favorite is more likely to win than the second favorite, who's more likely to win than the third favorite, who's more likely to win than the fourth favorite, all the way down the line. There is some predictive information in that, the cult concept of the wisdom of crowds. Horse racing is a very interesting laboratory for it. We've kind of gone down the rabbit hole on this, but I think in much more practical terms, you're making a good point. When you can go back and look at how horses have been bet in the past, it can give you an opportunity as to their true quality. And I think in the case of Mr. Pete, what I'm getting from that is this horse has way more speed than he showed when he lost three lengths at the start or whatever it was by veering out last time.
Absolutely, and the problem is like you mentioned, like you mentioned, it's going to be the hunch play. And as many listeners as we have, I mean, the horse is going to probably go off. It reminds me of the story that I know you know who I'm talking about, and I know that some of our close friends know who I'm talking about. I'm not going to say this person's name. I'll never forget. I was at Churchill Downs. Memories of Peter was running, and the horse was like 10-1 morning line, and the horse, it was like one of the worst morning lines ever. The horse was definitely going to be the first or second choice. And I remember sitting next to a prominent person in the Twitter world at this time. Well, he still is, I guess. And he's like, oh, I knew it when I picked this horse that he was going to go off favored. I literally threw up in my mouth a little bit, and it's never been the same since.
Oh, that was good use of – that's good use of literally, because I'm sure that actually did happen. That's pretty funny. Yes, we joke around when if we ever talk about, you know, the podcast bump or whatever. But they do say that horses with names in them – back in the old days, that was a thing. If a horse – like a New York horse with a common male name or like anything with Irish in it, you could count on them being underlays. I still think there might be a little something to that at a meet like Saratoga or whatever where you have enough quote-unquote public money flooding into the pools.
I made the other day on a Trump name. I can't remember the name exactly. Was it Make – I don't think it was Make America. Anyways, there was a something and I bet against the horse and – oh, it's Fake News. A horse named Fake News debuted and took money and had no business taking money out at California. So anyway.
That's funny. You think people were just betting on the clever name?
I do. I do. I think so.
All right. So you like the 2 and the 4 here as your A's. The 4 makes sense. Best of speed last time. Nothing special with the pace figures. And who was the 3rd one you were going to use?
The 6. It's just one of those things. And this feels like one of those maiden races where – you know, the rest of them are hopeless. There's 3 that can win, 3 that have experience. And I just felt dirty when I initially put 3 A horses that were all going to be the first 3 choices. I forced myself to move one of them back to a B horse to create a little bit of extra equity.
Did you give any count to Panama, Ed? I did think there was like a little bit of a middle move in that Mr. Pete race. Or did you just think that of those 2 efforts, Mr. Pete was so superior that you didn't need to bother with him?
Yeah, I just, you know, looking through the figures, if Mr. Pete, you know, time form ran a 69 last time with missing the break by 3 lengths and having and being wide all around there.
Yeah.
Panama Ed, you know, had the 59 without as many excuses. And the other thing, like we talked about, you know, Panama Ed was 40-1. On debut and the same race with Mr. Pete, Pete went off at 7-2. The world knew that Panama Ed didn't have a chance to beat Mr. Pete, and I would imagine the same will be the case tomorrow.
Very logical. And sometimes when you're looking at horses, I'll do that with horses coming out of the same race, and you need to cut. Look at horses almost like they're coming from different conferences in basketball or something when they're coming out of different races, and you can just sort of say like, okay, of the ones from this group, really these are the 2 that I need, maybe the best speed one and the best closer, and some other horses that were in there who are like theoretically competitive, would be the first ones to fall off, and that would be my case with Panama Ed as well, leaving those 3. Let's head out to the West Coast. Los Al, we don't give Los Al a whole lot of love on the podcast, so it's nice to have an opportunity to do so here. Which is the first race at Los Al we're talking about? Sorry, I got myself lost.
It's okay. You word played your way into the confusion. I thought. I thought you were being cheeky. I thought, geez, Pete's on his game this morning with the West, heading out to the West Coast.
Yes. It's the Los Al Derby, featuring the return to the races of West Coast, who was last seen winning at Belmont. You know, JK, I know you're obviously a serious handicapper, horse player who does the work. There's no doubt that in your time on the podcast, you do seem to have certain pet trainers or whatever, Bob Baffert being one of those. And then, you know, there's this day a few weeks ago in New York where Baffert wins everything. And, you know, he basically just gave you the 1 up, 4 down because you hadn't picked any of them, including West Coast. How do you feel about West Coast and his return to the races?
Well, we talked about West Coast being less than impressive when we were out at Santa Anita for the Preakness weekend, and I felt smart because I heard Baffert say the reason that they didn't run him in the Belmont was because they just weren't that impressed with how he won his last race. Here's what I'll say. I pulled up to the Austin Bergstrom International Airport yesterday morning or yesterday afternoon and was trying to get through security. And the lines were longer than they've ever been before because there was a fire alarm. So everyone that was in the airport had to leave and then go back in through security.
Oh, my gosh.
It was. I didn't think that that's where this whole nightmare kind of started.
You didn't even, you kind of buried the lead. Like that's a good way to start your travel nightmare.
Well, the problem is that when I was going through TSA, the reason I was so scared I was going to miss the flight is because I had to go. They found the silver wig in my bag, and I had to. they weren't really sure what it was. They didn't understand why a guy with a full head of hair had a wig. They pulled me aside. They did that little thing where they check for gunpowder, and they had to scan it. And the good news is I have it. And West Coast will win for fun. So
there you go. JK back in the Baffert camp. I wanted to talk to you about Klimt. There's a really,
in all seriousness.
Did I lose you, JK? Looks like I lost you. I will try to get you back here. No, it's saying that you're here. I'm going to disconnect and reconnect. Da, 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 da. We'll get this done, podcast listeners. What would be a show without a little dodgy hotel Wi-Fi coming up the works? But we'll have him back here in a second, and he can continue his story about the Los Al Derby, assuming we can get him on here. If we're going to continue to struggle, I'll just do the rest of the race myself. Klimt was a horse. I just wanted to share what I thought was an interesting angle that I got from Mike Maloney. This isn't one of the things that ended up appearing in the book, but I thought it's really interesting and worthy of passing along. You'll see this from time to time where you see, whether it's from a dispersal or something else, but you'll see horses all move from one trainer to another trainer. And the angle is that when the first couple of those horses run back, very often, whatever trajectory that takes, if they all improve, if they all run under par, that will continue to be a trend for other horses making the same trainer move. So that was my sort of like anti against Klimt, as we've seen some of these other, Dortmund, I guess, coming to mind, making the move from Baffert to the Sherman Barn and not running quite as well. But I mean, I think JK's point makes a ton of sense about just Baffert having done a good job of choosing the right spots for West Coast and being able to find places where that horse can go ahead and win. Are you back, JK?
I am back. I don't know what's going on. That was weird.
We lost you. You said seriously, and then we lost you like 2.5 minutes ago. So I don't know if you were talking that whole time or what, but did you have a closing thought on the Los Al Derby?
No, I just seriously think that he's going to win the race. I've always been kind of a Klimt hater. I can't imagine that Baffert's going to allow Klimt to beat him after leaving his barn.
I just made a whole point about that, but I won't. I won't bore you with that. You can hear it when you listen back to the show, as I'm sure you do, to write detailed critiques of your and my performance. I had one goofy idea in this race, just another one of those horse who could maybe run third or fourth at a whole lot of money, especially if you're going to go ahead and put West Coast on top or say West Coast has to run first or second. Do you give Milton Freewater any chance to sort of clunk along and run third or fourth here?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a problem with including horses like that. It's kind of a weird time anyways with these, you know, these three-year-olds kind of turning and, you know, getting ready to turn into older horses. You can find a lot of improvements with some of these. And I never really have a problem with Doug O'Neill. I've always talked about how much I respect him. The only problem I see with Milton Freewater is that I'm not sure the pace is going to be exactly scorching, and time form has him coming from last, which
he's going to be coming from back. I think my thought was that maybe other horses would be aggressive with each other mid race in an attempt to really win the race, get tired and or horrified by West Coast,
and be done, and this is just a horse who, coming for the back, going to clunk along and pass, you know, four of them to run third or fourth. That was, you know, that was the scenario I envisioned in my head. So we'll see if we can get another one of those type of plays in for the podcast. I will be honest, JK, I did not get a chance to look at the Maiden 20 that closes out this pick four. Actually, before we do that, so West Coast Lone A, any backups at all for you in race seven before we move to race eight?
No, I'm ice cold there.
Okay, so then go ahead and tell us how you closed it out.
Yeah, you know, I wanted to toss Gatto Dulce, the nine horse, the 9-5 favorite. And I would have if that horse was drawn in the 1-2-3. One thing about Los Al, and I don't know what the science is behind it, but Duke Matisse turned me on to this. He actually turned me on to it when we were late night degenerating one time. And he was telling me that he always...
You and Duke, yeah, betting when you probably shouldn't have been? I can't believe that's true.
He loves betting outside horses in the quarter horse races. He doesn't, like, handicap the races. I mean, you know, like, in depth, like he does everything else. But the outside is just always the place you kind of want to be at Los Al. And so if you can find a horse on the outside, they can make eight wide moves and still win there. And so I always give horses on the outside a little bit of an upgrade and horses down the inside a little bit of a downgrade. So that was one of the reasons I couldn't toss that 9-5 shot there, other than the fact that my DNA is predisposed to betting on favorites. But I'm going to use the 8 as an A horse as well, Wandering Ways, just because he seems like one that can get the job done. My interesting idea, I guess, here was the 5, Parched. He's the type of horse I'd use in a tournament. That speed and fade situation has shown speed in his last two starts and just kind of fell apart late. He's still in for 20, not getting much class relief, but was at Santa Anita coming back over to Los Al. You'd think a 20 at Los Al will be a little bit easier than a 20 at Santa Anita. And so he's one that I'll use. He should get a pretty good position outside. So I only use the 5, 8, 9 as A horses here. And in a normal situation, I might press up the 9 a little bit, but I'm not going to now because I was hesitant to include him anyways and felt like I was kind of forced into doing it.
Notable that the 5 and the 9 have both run higher than the buyer speed figure par, which is 63 at this level right now at Los Al. Yeah, I'm surprised you're not more excited about Gatto, actually, just from the fact that it did look like for the level the pace was pretty strong last time. So this is a horse who's run the pace par, who's run the final par, and is posted correctly. I'd be a little more inclined to use the 9 more than those other two based on what you just said, but seems like a good way to close it out. If folks want to take a look at exactly how your tickets got written, we're not going to give that. We're not going to do all the work for them. We'll send you over to Watch Out of the Gate for that. I have a segment on there too this week. I was a late pinch hitter for Craig Milkowski. Talk about coming down in the world, having me instead of Craig. But I did give an overview of some of the exciting tournament news going on, including these new Saratoga qualifiers that we're running this weekend. We've got feeders into an event a little bit later in the month, but we've also got direct qualifiers. Put up 290. One in 10 entries will win two $1,000 spots to Saratoga, plus 500 in travel. I have a feeling we might be looking at the name Jonathan Kinchin in the leaderboards in those Saratoga events. Am I right?
Well, he'll be on the leaderboard. I don't know if he'll be at the bottom or the top. My name's always on the leaderboard. Sometimes it's easier to find than others.
You've been quiet on DRFT, but this is an event which I figured you can't pass up.
No, absolutely. If you've never played in a tournament, this is a fun one. It's fun for a lot of reasons. One is because everyone who plays in tournaments shows up for this one. It's in the middle of the week, which is interesting. It's on a Wednesday and a Thursday. But you can't tell the difference between a Wednesday and a Thursday from your home track at Saratoga. It's still a happening place to be. It's a lot of fun. $1,000 entry fee. So it's a live bankroll, but it's a little bit more obtainable than some of the other larger ones that we see with, you know, 10,000, 12,000, 5,000. So, it's a ton of fun. It's one that I really enjoy participating in, as long as the weather cooperates. I kind of wanted to jump off of the balcony last year. It was a little bit warm, but hopefully this year will be better.
I have a couple of angles to try to get us some air conditioning this year. We'll see if they come through. let's go to some questions, unless you have any final thoughts about this cross-country pick four, JK. You feel like we covered it?
Yeah, no, some people are probably like, did they really do a sequence with – it's not the most glorious sequence in the world, but as horse players, I think we should reward innovation, and this is something that would be fun. You know, imagine a cross-country pick four on Santa Anita Derby Day with the wood running, or Keeneland doing it with so on and so forth. And I just, you know, Del Mar and Saratoga, how cool would a pick four be at Del Mar and Saratoga, the last two at Saratoga, the first two at Del Mar. So I want to encourage it. So that's why we decided to do it. So if you're around and throw a couple bucks at it just for fun, just to kind of keep the mojo going on that thing.
I like it. I like it. All right. Bunch of pod questions. Here's a good one. I didn't prep you for this, but I'll just get your off the top of the head suggestion. I need to go back and look at charts too. So we'll talk about this now and then maybe we'll revisit it. But Joe wants to know if anyone detected a speed bias on the grass on Stars and Stripes Day.
I haven't heard that. You know what? But I did talk to our friend Nick Tamaro, who I haven't told you this yet, Pete, but has volunteered to hop on Fridays during the Saratoga meet anytime we need him.
That's great.
He said that he'd love to get involved. So, you know, Nick is obviously a follower of what goes on NYRA and all NYRA, all things NYRA. We talked just in passing about how when they have the – at least recently, when they've had the rail up at Belmont, I guess it would be on the Widener. Is that what Oscar Performance won on?
I would have to look that up.
Okay. Either one. They have the rail up and then they take it down. The inside has been the place to be. And I don't know if that's...
I would say that's generally true. That's a generally correct trend. One day I remember that happening was Belmont Day on the turf last year, where it did seem like the inside was favorable to me on the turf, making like Flincher's run all the more impressive.
One of the tricky things about identifying a turf bias is that being on the inside in turf racing is the most advantageous trip ever, right? I mean, that's why we're even having the conversation about whether or not Jose.
Now, mostly it's an inside out trip, I would say.
Right.
You know what I
mean?
It's exactly. It's not hugging the rail the whole way. It's saving ground, swinging out so you're in the clear, and finishing.
Absolutely. So, I can't answer that question strongly. Well, my gut would be no. I mean,
yeah, my gut would be no too, simply because I didn't notice it in real time. So that makes my gut no. But it doesn't mean I don't want to go back and take a little bit of a look.
And here's the thing: this is kind of I'm not trying to answer your question with a question, but like, who ran poorly that was supposed to run well that was drawn outside? You know what I mean? Like, is there what performance? There needs to be performances of horses that you thought were going to run well that had no excuse, and the excuse that you have to land on was that they were drawn poor, that, you know, that they were outside. And that's one of the things that we typically do dirt and turf.
Yeah, that was something we did for, you know, that's sort of how we came in real time between Oaks Day and Derby Day to the idea of the inside. I remember you asking me that exact question, and then when I went back and looked at charts and had an answer for you, it was something that started to make sense. My gut watching was that it was fair. The second part of the question from Joe was, can there be biases on synthetic? And the answer there is abso-freaking-lutely. I would say these days, not that I play a lot of synthetic, but I feel like every other time I watch a race on synthetic, it's either the inside is really good or the inside is really bad. Like, I think the synthetic, it's biases are a huge factor despite what they are theoretically supposed to be. Do you don't play a lot of synth either, but do you agree with that idea generally, Jonathan?
Yeah, you know, it's talking to we've talked about it before, but who I think are the biased kings of the world would be Duke and Paul Matisse. I've talked to them about that, and they said that it would happen from time to time. But it was always confusing because just like the turf, it was an inside-out trip that did well on synthetic anyways, that kind of swinging move. And so it could kind of be deceiving at times. It's not as pronounced and easy to see as it is on the dirt, but it is definitely something that You know, it'll get a little deeper at certain places, and it can be there. But I haven't really studied my next step in handicapping, where I kind of started to pay attention to bias. You know, all the synthetic tracks were already gone.
Right. You want to see some interesting bias stuff on synthetic? Watch some live races from Southwell one day over in the UK on fiber sand, and watch the jockeys avoid the rail coming into the stretch as if there was like 20 crocodiles over there. It's like almost comical how far off the rail, practically coming all the way to the stand side on some days. Yeah, those tracks can get good rails, bad rails, absolutely. Let's move on to a question from Garrett, who's new to the handicapping scene, has read Betting Thoroughbreds, the buyer books are on the way, heard me on BIC this morning, I guess talking about Wednesday, up talking about how it's so important to synthesize a lot of information and then sort of use your intuition in handicapping. He was just looking for an overview of what I consider the most important things to look at when handicapping a race. And what is the preferred order of operations, he says. Do I start with past races, workouts, pace scenarios, trainer angles, etc.? And it's good. It's a good thing to think about once in a while, because when you handicap a lot of races, it just becomes so intuitive. You don't really always break it down step by step. But to answer, I'll take a shot at the two parts of the question, JK, and then I want your thoughts. But I mean, for me, the most important factors are the most fundamental stuff. And as I continue to evolve, pace and final figures, pace figures, final figures are really at their most fundamental what I'm looking at. And then behind that, you have areas like class and current form and trainer stats. And then really, like, very often the difference makers, the things that will make me alter how I look at a race fundamentally, are ideas like bias and trips. So even though trips and bias don't fundamentally affect the outcome of races as much as speed and pace figures, I have a lot more bets based on trips and biases, because that's information that not everybody has. It's very, 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 very rare in 2017 that you can just see, okay, this is the fastest horse, and therefore he's going to be the horse I bet. The public is too smart for that. But very often you could find a horse who maybe at first blush looks like the third fastest horse in the race, but you know about the bias that slowed him down two back and the trip he had last time, and you know that really that horse is supposed to be the one that you want to bet today. So it's kind of a hard question to answer what's most important, because you got to start with those fundamentals, but even though those secondary factors are almost become primary in their importance, because they change the way you see the whole picture. And in terms of looking at a race for me, it would start with trying to get an overall assessment of what the pace is going to be, because that will change the outcome of a race if you're looking at an extreme pace situation. If it looks like an average pace situation, then I'm just going to be sort of going back through those PPs and trying to assess how fast I think each horse is going to run today, and then ranking them. You know, this all happens sort of intuitively, like I said, but if I were to write it out as a step-by-step process, ranking those horses and trying to figure out, get not just, okay, this horse is my pick, but get like a big view of the race. Like, is this an open race where a lot of horses can win? Is this a race that narrows down where only three contenders can win? Is this a race where I have some special piece of information that makes the seven horse the one that I know is going to be value, and I want to key everything around them? So that's my 1 minute overview on all that stuff. Any of that you'd like to pick up on or add to, JK?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you ask what's the most important thing, this answer is going to be annoying, but it's all important, because the moment that you say that something else is more important than another, it's going to beat you. You're gonna get beat. Oh, damn! I didn't see that horse had a bad trip. You can start with speed, but then this, you know, so it's all important. So you have to learn to, depending on your time or whatever it is that obstacles we have, you have to learn to include all of the things in one swoop if you can. You got to work on your workflow, which I think is one of the most important things. One of the things I've talked about, you know, for a while, after I started using Timeform, which I really recommend to people, that kind of helps my workflow because it eliminates a lot of different steps is I look at the Timeform US pace projector and I handicap from speed backwards. So it's automatically I'm looking at the pace scenario. I'm looking at the, you know, I'm infusing their past pace performances and all of those things that kind of come up with a, when I'm designing the race, how it's going to look. And so that's one of the things that I would recommend. And I typically do recommend to people that feel like they're just getting started is to kind of find something that can help you handicap in an order that your mind will be able to design the race more effectively than doing the old start at 1 all the way down to 10. The other thing is which I found to be really beneficial is in your head, tell the story by starting at the bottom of the PP, not the last race, but the first race that shows up, the oldest race. And I do it all the time. Oh, you know, for instance, that horse Parched, who's still up on my screen. All right, they debuted him in April for 75. He gets beat by 14. Then he comes back on a wet fast track for 30, gets beat 10. Then they stretch him out to a mile. He gets a little bit closer, finally hits the board going a mile again. Maybe he wanted to go two turns all along. Like I do that in my head, not necessarily out loud. And I think that it can kind of help you understand how you can land on a spot. And the other thing I'll say is, one of the things I would not do first is trainer stats, because I feel like if you find a good one, it marries you to a horse that you might not need to be on based on all other 87 principles of handicapping. But we're you know, it's our nature, it's human nature to be excited that you found something that maybe someone else didn't, and then you feel like you got to prove it to yourself and to someone else.
I think that's all excellent advice. Trainer stats for me are more as I'm going through performing that exercise that JK described, going from older races to newer races, there'll be questions that come up. Okay, how does this guy do second off a layoff? I want to know, is he somebody who wins with his first-time starters? How does he do with surface switches? Whatever it is, you'll come up with these questions as you're going through it. And I'll even make a note, like go back and formulate this after I get through the whole race. I find that more effective than using that as a primary factor. However, that said, and to JK's point that it all matters, there are some situations where certain trainers especially at certain tracks, will move horses up to so many lengths that like I see that a certain trainer has a horse in first off a claim and that horse is in. That horse is an A because I'm not going to get beat by this guy. So sometimes trainer stat can take on primary importance. But most of the time, I think what JK is advising is correct. JK, can we do the Rubalinda story in 2 minutes or less so we can get you out of here and on your train up to Stanford?
No, I mean, there's not much to do. I just wanted to get your take on it.
Yeah, tell me.
Maybe invite. We should do a poll. I don't know if that makes any sense. I don't want to pile on Jose, but I think it took me almost 10 days to realize it. I think that it was an unfortunate ride. It wasn't a bad ride. He was trying to do what was right. Unfortunately, the mistake I think that was made was when you're on a horse that's much the best, you're not supposed to get your horse in a situation where that can happen.
Describe what happened for those who might not have seen it.
He got buried down inside, trying to save ground. He fought her the first half mile, was late to get out, and just couldn't run down a loose Todd horse who had that had some back class, and that was pretty much it. And it wasn't a good one. And I would imagine that. He did not have a very warm welcome when he got back to Chad. I've seen Chad at Saratoga get
famous.
After.
Yeah, he's pretty famous for not suffering unlucky rides. I'm going to put it that way.
Someone who's close to the Chad operation. I saw a screenshot text that said that if Jose was smart, he would jump off in the infield and unsaddle and send Rubalinda back with the outrider.
But now you say that fully knowing that the chat is sort of famous for not suffering any like I said, unluck, not necessarily saying that that's completely his fault, but you think there was another option available to Rubalinda. You think he could have stayed out of the jackpot there.
Yeah, and then like our friend Mike Maloney said, is he one of the trips he hates the most, which he pointed out to me, was rate, strangle, rate, ask to go. He thinks it's very confusing for the horses when you don't just kind of give them their head to understand that now they can start to run, but you rate them, and then in a hurry you're like, here we go, let's go.
Like, right. In other words, and the jockey is signaling this with hands. You know, there's a way you can sort of gradually let a horse get into it, as opposed to going from grab, 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 push, push, push. I think that's what he's objecting to. Am I right?
100%. Yeah, 100%. It's got to be a gradual situation.
Yeah,
you can't just
let go of the hold and let them sort of get their rhythm and energy going, and then you sort of help them along as opposed to you know, picture it in a car. You know, going from, foot on the brake, push it, as opposed to, you know, a more gradual increase in speed. It's a little bit easier to when you go through all the gears, as opposed to just going from a slow crawl to flooring it. All right, JK, I got to let you get done with this show. It's a little bit of a truncated edition, but we got a lot of good stuff in there. I apologize once again for my false promises about doing a Saratoga and Del Mar preview. I think you forgot to mute, JK, before you did whatever you're doing, because you're louder than me.
Oh, my bad.
But that's okay. We forgive you. False promises about Del Mar and Saratoga, but I guarantee only one more chance to do them before the summer meets start, and that's going to be on Tuesday's show. So we will be back and see you then. I really want to thank Jonathan Kitchen. Herculean efforts to get not only to the Stanford seminar, long story, but he's really helping me out by doing that, and also by getting up for the podcast today instead of getting that precious extra sleep. I want to thank all of you for listening as usual, especially the handful of you who actually decided to tune in the middle here and listen to us live. And those of you who ask questions, hit us up, podcast@drf.com. Find us on Twitter. JK should put his poll up now that he promised to do so. You can vote in that as well. We will be back on Tuesday. I'm Peter Thomas Fornital. May you win all your photos.